Contrary to popular wishes, we've given up recording Python GTK videos and bringing this podcast instead. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And this is Season 2, Episode 9 of the podcast, in which we are talking Google, Google, and some more Google, while you hear back on the results of our TuxRadar challenge and our open ballot. Are you excited by HP's Slate tablet? Don't forget you can subscribe to Linux Format and buy us lovely lunch and stuff at tuxradar.com/subscribe.
It's now time for the news, which is my favourite part of the podcast.
What's the news, Graham?
Let me have a look.
What's the buzz?
Webm.
Which
I think has something to do with Google. Google announced that it is creating its own super codec thing to take over the universe called Webm.
Wow.
Subscribe to Linux Format and we'll buy him a teleprompter.
I'm terribly excited about it. It contains that really nifty video codec that they bought not so long ago that we spent a long time talking about.
Yeah. This is what VP8 plus Vorbis.
Plus Vorbis.
Plus Matroska container.
Yeah, equals plus MKV.
Cut down Matroska too.
Right, and this is a new video delivery format.
That's it, thanks,
Mike. To compete with, what, H.264?
Presumably that's the main target, yeah. Apple have already said no, haven't they?
Right,
but No, Steve has already said no.
He hasn't said no at all.
Hasn't he?
He just sent a link to a big debate about why it's no good, the codec, which was written by one of the developers of X264, who, of course, is not at all biased. I think it's WebM. I'm not sure WebM is quite as cool.
It's like Web Media.
I'm sure it stands for, but it tells you the clues in the name. H.264 works offline videos very, very well. Online videos very, very well. Hmm. Maybe they're making it clear they don't care how it works offline, it's designed for online. So they can optimize for that particular use case, perhaps.
Well,
given their own YouTube.
So X264, that's the open source.
The open source H.264 product, yeah.
Yeah, and Steve linked to that, presumably patent infringing.
Well, it's not patent infringing because H.264 consortium have said we're not going to file any patent claims, any lawsuits about it for the next few years. Because they obviously want the whole world to be using it before they start suing.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Get them hooked.
Yeah.
I wonder if I've seen that before. Anyway, it's got to be good news for Linux, I'd have thought. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like good news for people who use computers and the internet.
It's like a better Theora, isn't it going to be a better Theora?
Look at videos.
If it truly is comparable to X264, H.264.
But is it?
Well, I don't know. I just haven't looked at any decent comparisons yet.
Well, if it's to do with Google, it will probably be quite good.
Or colourful.
Google didn't make it, they just bought it from this other company, Onto.
Well, Google
and Onto also made the codec that eventually became Theora, which was rubbish when they released it.
Yeah, but Google buy cool things, like YouTube. YouTube's ace.
Yeah.
I'm at the zoo. Elephants got big noses. That was YouTube before Google bought it.
Hey, that was a great video. I gave it 5 stars.
Well, the X264 guy broke it down. He didn't do any real-world tests. He just did lots and lots of comparisons of algorithms. Because X264 project has done a huge amount of work on, quite frankly, crazy algorithms for detecting and encoding video. They're doing, you know, psychoanalytic stuff, really weird, that I barely understand, where, you know, technically it's worse, the video, but it looks better because that's the way your mind works.
Cool.
This kind of thing. They've done really mental stuff, and this guy basically goes through all the algorithms that are interesting in the codecs and compares them, and his general conclusion is the VP8 codec is substantially worse than H.264 across the board. Not in real-world tests, in algorithmically.
So what has Google done? They've come out and said, hey, look, we've got WebM, and now, we're not doing anything with it. Have they said we're going to use this on YouTube?
It already works on YouTube from today. Already works. You can go ahead and use it if you have a VP8, sorry, WebM installed, working.
Really?
Yeah, works from today. But what they've also said, which is a big mistake, they said, this is it, it's set in stone. That's the standard. That's WebM. Not, here it is, what do you think, let's work together and make a great sound in 6 months' time. It's, that's it, finished. So people have said, listen, it hasn't got this feature, which is using the very latest H.264 stuff, hasn't got this. We could add that really easily, but we're not going to because it's fixed in stone. That's the standard, which is a strange choice.
Well, presumably they want, you know, to get the standard adopted as much as possible without fiddling around with it behind the scenes.
It's already behind H.264.
Yeah.
H.264 has something called base profile and high profile. But the PS3 supports both, and the high profile is the advanced version with all the features turned on, the bells and whistles basically, which has a very, very good quality. And VP8 is behind that. Which is lame.
Hmm.
And what's up with it?
Well, I think it'll obviously be integrated in Chrome and it'll work well with Linux. But then X264 stuff does as well.
But don't you think it's so strange that it uses nearly all the same technologies as H.264, which have been patented on H.264?
Yeah.
People are saying it may well infringe patents.
I'm sure it'll be put to test as well, because, Google now owns it.
It skirts very, very close. People have said, apparently, where it works with these patents is, if you infringe two of the three claims, doesn't matter. Only if you infringe all three do you actually technically infringe a patent. So the X264 guy reckons they've chosen deliberately broken algorithms in places.
Right.
So they've got all the best stuff and then go, this bit here, can't have that, because that would actually finally infringe that patent. So they've basically swum very, very carefully the patent war to basically re-implement most of H.264 in Wet NVPA. That's what the guy said. Now, he obviously is working on the H.264 project.
Yeah.
H.264, so he might be biased. But he did go into a huge amount of depth.
What does Google want out of this, other than being altruistic and nice and giving us a largely free codec?
I doubt there's any altruism in it.
But you think they'd be happy with H.264? They've got money leaking out of the wazoo.
I think they probably just like to stir things up a little bit and not throw all their eggs in one basket. I mean, Google TV, that's another news item that we were going to move on to. Mm. If they're moving their products towards a television set-top box kind of thing, they want to own the media. They want to own how the content is transferred
and the format,
how it's stored on their servers and how it's transferred. And I suppose it gives them that control. I mean, we might as well talk about that.
But H.264 is years old at the standard.
Yeah.
And H.265, the next one, what they're calling it, a next generation video codec, is a long way along. And their plan is completely crazy. They plan to, I think, double the quality at half the bandwidth or something crazy like that. They really want to push the next version forward even further. Because now their thinking is CPU basically is free.
Yeah.
Use up more and more CPU time for more and more advanced codecs. So that's their plan.
Right.
So VP8 may fall out of fashion very quickly if the next generation video codec does indeed come out.
Is there any hardware at the moment that decodes VP8?
No, but presumably it's just a programmable DSP, so they can just put it into place pretty
easily.
And
it must be very similar to X264 accelerated decoding.
It was supposed to be called H.265.
Right.
But now they're calling it H.264 Plus or something like that, on the grounds that actually it shares all the same features. The same hardware will do most of the work.
Yeah.
The last little bit will be different.
Moving on, but staying with Google, this is something that we can get excited about, I think. It's Android 2.2, the new operating system for Google's Android-based mobile phones that seem to be doing very well. We talked about it last episode. Android 2.2... The best feature, the feature that we've talked about this morning that we got excited about, is portable hotspots, which will turn your Android phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot that you can use for your local Wi-Fi enabled devices.
So like tethering.
Tethering, but with Wi-Fi rather than Bluetooth. So you don't need a Bluetooth compatible device to use it. But presumably you'll need a mobile phone operator who's happy to let you do it. Which it's true. Which is anything like iPhone tethering, it's going to cost a large sum,
huge amount of money. Yeah,
but for those people, presumably with Nexus One devices, who are free to choose whoever they want, and presumably there's nothing locked down in Android 2.2 on a Nexus One, they can do it now.
But tethering is expensive right now. But if they said, okay, that's tethering fee you pay, actually we'll make that into a Wi-Fi hotspot payment, I'd probably do that. That might just be enough for me. If it was the same payment through tethering and Wi-Fi hotspot, as in other folks could share it really, really easily.
Well, why not just pay for the data that you use through your mobile connection?
Obviously, yeah.
Unlimited should mean unlimited. And the cool thing is that
it's got O2.
USB tethering, did you see that? That's only compatible with Linux and Windows. So you can plug your mobile phone into something that doesn't have Wi-Fi. It's running Linux, and presumably get really good speeds through your 3G network on the train. but at least you don't have to share it or have an access point running. Maybe it charged your device as well. So you sat on the train, plug your USB phone in, you're the only one sharing the device. Excellent. I think that could be an iPhone killer feature, depending on how it works out. Of course, there's improvements to speed as well. They're promising 2 to 5 times speed improvements on the OS.
Which is embarrassing, quite frankly.
Well, yeah.
What I've said is, we've got this by implementing a just-in-time compiler.
Yes, who's heard of JIT?
Welcome to 1998. and it's awesome because the Mono folks said, listen, it's great that Dalvik's 5 times faster. Mono is still 50% faster. Keep it up, it's quite sad, actually.
Another thing I saw that looked interesting was additions cloud to device, device to cloud through the API. And the example they show on their Android 2.2 video is using Google Maps on your desktop machine, clicking on a location and syncing it to your phone immediately through the cloud, which I think is a nice feature. It's a bit like MobileMe on the iPhone. Yeah, of course, through Google servers. But it should mean that any developer can add that functionality without locking you into, well, it's done through Exchange for contacts and email, so it would be nice to see how it's done. Incidentally, 2.2 is called Froyo.
It's a frozen yogurt.
Frozen yogurt.
Oh, my God.
So, terrible name.
Wouldn't it be awesome if Google tied in Google App Engine, which is where your code runs on their server, with all their server-side, cloudy, Androidy stuff, with the Androidy client-side APIs? I'm using lots of technical jargon here.
Yeah.
So you can write some server-side code that hooked up to your client-side code, all using Google APIs in between.
I guess you can. I mean, surely that's what they're aiming for.
That'd be good. Well, I don't think you can do the App Engine side yet.
Yeah.
Can't look into the Android stuff just yet, but you can obviously do the client-side stuff.
I mean, the browser's going to be a lot faster, isn't it?
Apparently,
JavaScript improvements. Yeah. And maybe more importantly for everyone, Flash.
Flash, of course, yeah.
I don't know if I'm that excited by it, but... I quite like the hard line taken against Flash because, you know, it's brought it to the fore, and I don't like Flash either. It's a pain. But, you know, at least you've got the opportunity to run it. And,
well, if it demonstrates that Flash can be doable on a portable device, then one of Apple's objections to it will fall out the window.
Certainly
it
gets the media in a frenzy, doesn't it? It's all anyone ever seems to talk about.
All the guys who went to Google I.O. got a free phone with 2.2 on, and it was the new Evo 4 thing, which is battery life measured in minutes rather than hours.
Oh, right.
Really, really bad. You almost watch the battery meter going down, apparently.
Really?
So I'm not sure the flashing will turn out too nicely for them, no matter what happens.
That was one of Steve Jobs' complaints, wasn't it, about battery life?
We'll see. That's, I think, probably conjecture on his behalf.
Mm.
The only other thing that caught my notice was auto updates, all your applications update transparently in the background if you enable them and let them do so.
Well, from the Android app store.
Yeah, you can either set it to auto-update them transparently or update them all, like you can on an iPhone currently, when you choose to.
What is transparently then? I mean, does it just use up your bandwidth in the background when you're not? I mean, then you go to check your email.
Well, yeah,
and you
I guess it going so slow.
I don't know, actually, on the details of it, but presumably an update is pushed to an app when it's updated.
I'm just thinking, I know that with Palm OS, it does a similar thing. It's it downloads new versions of the OS in the background. It says when your phone is idle, but... Unless there's some sort of internal bandwidth shaping going on, then that could become very, very annoying. Well,
you know, apps probably aren't updated all that often, depending on how many you have installed. So
you know, some apps are like 500 megabytes, aren't they? And if you're sitting on Edge, if you're...
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Up north somewhere. With,
maybe it's just...
I don't know. Yeah.
But I think it looks like a really strong update, and it's available now, which is the most important thing.
And soon you'll be able to install it on your iPhone.
It's staggered, isn't it?
Well, if you've got a Nexus One, you can download it today.
Yeah.
If you're tied to some contract on a phone, then you're at the you're totally at the whim of your provider. So who knows? And finally, in the news, we touched on it before. It's Google TV, which is Google taking over your home from your television screen, a little bit like Big Brother. They want to put Google in your set-top box so that you can seamlessly search from your living room couch and watch YouTube videos. And I don't know, it looks like another attempt to bring Linux to the living room. I'm not convinced.
It looks to me like a sort of Myth TV thing, but done on the internet. So a bit like how Google Apps and stuff, Google Docs, is like a word processor, but that's on the internet, like a PVR thing in the cloud. Why not?
To me, it looked like a kind of an RSS thing with the search engine built in, so that you kind of subscribe to some video podcast, and whenever it's updated, it will download it or play it, stream it.
Or the match of the day RSS feed. Or
I don't really get it. I mean, I think most people who want to can get video on demand through the internet on a console or whatever it is they want. And, you know, I've got the ability. I don't ever do it.
Well, that's the thing. So you're saying now I can sit on my couch in front of my telly watching YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Whilst eating pizza and getting drunk. Sounds great.
Well, you just need that little robot waiter
to bring my pizza and beer.
But the problem is that the fundamental problem I've got is that web video isn't very nice.
No, it's horrible.
YouTube's it would be the slight exception to that. Yeah. But when you watch any video anywhere, you watch a half a minute advert beforehand where you can watch a video.
Yeah.
Which is depressing. And the video clip's only like 4 minutes. Whereas on TV shows, it's a whole hour, and maybe if you're on iPlay, press go and it's off.
Yeah.
In the UK at least.
It's interesting in that I think a lot of televisions and things these days do have web functionality, and it might kind of create a unified front end to that through Google, and it's probably running Android and Linux. So
how do pop-up windows work? Yeah, pressing the close button on your remote.
Who knows? I don't know.
Mine's got internet on my TV.
Yeah,
which is it's got it requires an Ethernet cable. There's no way I'm going to put Ethernet in my front room, quite frankly.
Yeah,
and that's the same problem I've got here. You know, I don't really want a keyboard in my front room either through Google search.
Oh, do you think you'll need a keyboard to do it?
How does you search?
Yeah,
like the old arcade games, you have to hold left on the stick till you get to A.
No, there'll be hideous SMS emulation through your remote, which will be even worse because you'll be looking at the remote and realise you missed one letter off when you get to the end of the sentence. So that's it. I mean, all Google news, Google going for
Google dominance.
Strength, yeah.
So Google, this is owned by Rupert Murdoch, isn't it?
Yeah, we are owned by Google.
Well, it must all come together eventually for them. They've obviously got some sort of grand plan. Or maybe they haven't. Maybe their plan is not to perfect one platform, but just keep on moving until
turn all the adjacent squares to the same colour as Google.
Well, it's gonna make certainly a big fight over the next iPhone, and hopefully a big fight over the next Apple TV, and a bit of competition finally in that desktop space.
Yeah,
make a big difference.
Has Linux improved because Google is using Linux? Probably not.
Well, certainly if every set-top box running Google runs Linux. It doesn't make the desktop any better, but it makes it everywhere. At least.
Yeah,
we win the war for everywhereness.
But it's like the winning the war on mobile phones. Millions of mobile phones running Linux, but nobody really cares.
It's fine. Well, I don't really want them to care.
We'd care if it was something horrible and closed source.
Symbian helped us, hasn't it?
If our mobile
phones. That's worth.
Yeah, well, exactly. I know Symbian's open source, but still, no one really likes it.
I'm going to install it on my desktop box now, just to see.
You dare us. You there. You listening to the podcast. You dared us. Or rather, we dared you. And we were met with deafening silence. No one laid down. After we slapped down our leather studded Judas Priest glove, no one picked it up. You're all too scared, I think.
To be fair, we did say we'd post that bit on the site, didn't we? And then
did we? Didn't post that bit. Oh, is it? Oh, so on the notes here where it says epic fail.
Yeah. As in, we didn't even post anything on the site.
Oh, that was us failing.
Yeah, our fail.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, listeners. I take it all back. Apart from the Judas Priest leather glove, because Anna Graham's very fond of that.
I am. You can have it back.
Oh, so we failed then.
Well, I was busy porting GNOME to Haiku. So.
I was busy hacking the herd.
There we go. Far more important, industrious things.
Did you have much success? Because I saw what you were working on. It looked really good.
Well, the problem is that Haiku's designed to be light and fast. And as soon as I put one single GNOME library on there, it became the most slow, horrible operating system on the planet. So yeah.
But once I finish with a GDK thread library, it'll really help.
Woohoo!
Have you got the Swahili language packages for OpenOffice ported yet?
Oh, damn it. That was the first thing on my list, actually. Oh,
fail.
I forgot.
I got stuck in the GNOME Dbus stuff, you know, which made it very difficult.
Really?
Yeah.
That's horrible. You should use Bonobo instead.
Oh, that's
I hear that's great.
Yeah, you're right.
Do you think you'll finish putting them to Haiku by the time for next podcast?
Yeah, I think so.
Should we issue a new challenge then, or should we stick with BZ Flag?
I'm not sure BZ Flag is going to happen because I'm afraid of Mike's skills all at it.
That's what's happening here, isn't it? You're all scared
too, yeah.
And B, we're behind multiple levels of firewalls here, we now realise.
Yes. That's true. That's why it takes a day to download anything, isn't it?
So if someone wants to come to the office and have a thumb war with Graham, I'm sure they'll happily play you.
Yeah, and if you wear the Judas Priest leather glove, you'll be bound to win.
In fact, the Judas Priest leather glove works on its own. It doesn't need a hand in it.
We have a new dare, I think. Any ideas?
Well, we had an idea earlier, didn't we?
Did you?
Distro
yeah,
watch.
Yeah, distros. We're going to dare ourselves to change our distro to something, and not something lame, like changing from Kubuntu to Commandriva. Like, actually changing a distro to a distro that's not in the Distro Watch Top 10. No. To force ourselves to think outside the box.
Whoa.
I don't think Kubuntu's in the Top 10.
Well, but Ubuntu is.
I said top 10.
That would be lame.
Oh, yeah. Go on, seriously.
Not Ubuntu Christian Edition or, you know,
Not okay, not in the top 100.
Not in the top 100, I'll do it.
No, in the top 100, fine, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah, yeah,
very
whatever.
Episode of sweat slide, yeah. Isn't
it? I always worry about the Udera section.
Except that I tried to install Fedora the other day, and the BIOS of my Dell Optiplex doesn't recognize the DVD drive
that's
anymore.
That's Fedora. When you're installing Sidux 0.28 Beta 4, number 102 in the DistroWatch list, I'm sure it'll all be fine.
So there you go. We dare ourselves to try a obscure distro and report back on its merits, please, gentlemen.
Okay. Sure thing.
Challenge accepted.
And with that heady blend of fail and win, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the fortnight, our In the Hot Seat section with the squeaky bull back in action, and our open ballot, which this time was, are you excited by the HP Slate? It's you.
It's Dotwa, the discovery of the week. And I'm going to start this episode because I've discovered something awesome. Well, I think it's awesome, and you may not. You've probably heard of the XXD command before, which makes a hex dump of a file at the command line.
Yeah, it's one of my favourites.
It's absolutely great. But I never knew that you can generate a hex dump from it and then edit the hex dump and feed it back into XXD to generate a binary. Now, I use hex editors quite a bit, being a low-level programmer, and when I'm messing around at the command line, usually I can't find any hex editing tool without launching some big GNOME program. So I was really chuffed to see XXD generating a text file, hex dump of a file, edit it, and then run XXD again with dash R in the file, and it outputs a binary. So
that's pretty cool.
Hex editing in any text editor of your choice, if you love Emacs or Vim or Nano, the only proper decent text editor, then...
There must be some curses hex editor, though.
I think there is, but you know, a lot of the time I don't have one. I could be bothered.
I don't
using
want to take anything
or...
away from your discovery.
I've worked so hard on this discovery. So there you go, all you low level hackers out there. Next, Andrew.
Yeah, I've got two.
Whoa! Is that allowed? I'll have to check the rules.
Okay. While you're checking the rules, let me inform everyone of the Mac Format podcast. Huh? Which I discovered not long ago. It's at http and then those squiggly bits. macformat.techradar.com/podcast. I don't, obviously, as they just sit on the same floor as us, I don't want to be too negative. And because we're kind of a competing podcast, I don't want to be too positive. So I'll just say, go and check it out and see what you think. Also, I discovered, you know, regular listeners may remember that I updated about three versions of Ubuntu online all in one go, and it went without a hitch. I updated to Lucid Links, and it went horribly, horribly wrong, but was able to rescue it by, because all the graphics stopped, the pretty pictures and the pretty colours went away, and I just had text, and I used apt-get update and apt-get... upgrade, then it fixed it.
Whoa.
It was brilliant. Wow. It's like a broken machine. I thought I'd lost all of my stuff. And with a few simple commands that I found on Google.
You've just floored Mark Shuttleworth. You're the final boss of Ubuntu.
But it felt wicked. It felt really cool. I only had to cry to Mike twice. And I fixed it almost all by myself.
That's interesting. Your entire graphical subsystem had gone down. The X server obviously was completely boned, and apt-get update.
Just apt-get, what an awesome, awesome command.
That's all you need to do to fix any Linux problem now, quite clearly. Good work. Graham.
Okay.
Right, take your time.
Well, I was writing a blog post earlier on that I haven't finished. About my messed up multi-touch on my Samsung NC10 that isn't really mine. And I came across a command to make it work. And it's a command that I think I've known about, but never really knew how versatile it was. It's X input. Have you ever used it?
No, I've heard of it.
It's obviously a way of probing devices connected to X and the X system. But it's actually quite usable. It's not as scary as it sounds. So... X input space list lists everything connected to your machine. So mice, keyboard, through that runs through the X server. So it is generally mice and keyboards and touchpads. But you can also list the capabilities of each device by typing X input and then your Synaptics touchpad in double quotes. And it'll tell you exactly what it's capable of and how you can change the parameters. You can change them by typing set prop, and then the name of the property is listed in the output. So I'll post how to do it, but that's how you get multi-touch working on the Synaptics touchpad in UNR, since they dumped HAL.
Right.
But you can do all kinds of things, like set the special keys on your keyboard or use
multimedia keys.
All the buttons on your mice as well as all the rockers and stuff. They all appear in X input as properties, and you can just map them to other things. It's a really cool little command.
It's a command line tool as part of X.
How
does it store the settings? How do you...
The settings aren't stored. That's it. If you need to use them and go back to them, it's best just to stick them in a script that runs X input.
And run it at the start of your X session.
Yeah. That's my discovery.
Awesome. And finally, Paul Hudson.
I've discovered a few things. I have to at least do one more than Andrew, really, don't I? First thing, I think as website visitors will have figured out by now, I'm starting to really not quite hate Python quite so much. Insofar as when working with GTK, in interactive mode, it's quite nice. I still wouldn't want to write whole programs in Python because I find it deeply distasteful that it doesn't do any sort of type checking. But for interactive, it's very, very nice. Second thing I discovered was during a very embarrassing conversation with someone, we were talking about this lady was from Nigeria, and she'd got married a few months ago, and my wife asked her, well, how was your mother? Was she worried? You know, at the wedding, it's her first daughter getting married, and the lady said, oh, she was late. We thought she said that. Ildiko asked her again, what do you mean she was late? She was late. And weird silence. My wife tries to laugh it off, okay, she's like, haha. What the woman actually meant was, she is late, meaning she is dead.
Oh,
as in the late Mr. Woman. Reverend whatever, Reverend Brown.
Very late.
And so Ilko was kind of laughing to fill a weird gap, and then she didn't understand why she was laughing. And so if you ever meet a Nigerian person who says, sort of like, is late, it means as an ex-parrot, not coming back again in the future. And the last thing I discovered, actually more Linuxy, is marvincomputers.co.uk, a new UK company that sells Linux-based machines, but all based on Ubuntu, all coming with a 3-year warranty and towards the higher end of the market, not your cheapy stuff. Real 100% compatible Ubuntu machines shipped in the UK. They'll ship around the world too, actually.
Kudos to him. Yeah, I think I've seen him on the forums.
With a guarantee, a really good guarantee too. So have a look. Prices are very good, I think. We'll hopefully try and get some in for review, perhaps. So check it out.
I hope we can make a business of it. I have come across that site before. Yeah. We need more stuff like this. Small players to sell Linux.
Well, Dell did not fill the hole at all. They muffed it up. People want support.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people as well, a lot of staunch Linux users and free software fans don't want to buy computers from great big Microsoft supporting companies like Dell anyway. So if you've got a small local community type of computer shop, a one or two man outfit that just sells Linux machines,
it's
a lot of people.
So difficult for them, though. I mean, just imagine, do they split their day actually packing boxes and sending them, or do they dare answer the phone?
Either way, check it out, see what you think. Sadly, due to government cutbacks, our wheel is not around right now. We'll get it repaired hopefully soon with a newer, cheaper version. In the meantime, we're going to spin a coin to find out whether heads it will be Mike Saunders talking about openoffice.org, or tails, Mike Saunders talking about Grub.
Oh, come on.
Go ahead and spin the coin. Grub.
Hey! All right, that's easy. So,
No, best of three.
We can spin it again and make it the best of three if you want. If you'd rather talk about something other than Grub,
I'm happy in any case.
But what if I don't want to hear you talking about Grub?
Okay, spin it again.
Grub.
All right, once more.
Okay, openoffice.org this time.
Hey!
Oh, we'll go with that one, shall we? Fair enough. Well, usual rules apply. You've got 1 minute. I have the squeaky ball. You must not be allowed to stop in the meantime. Sound good? Go.
I used to be a huge fan of openoffice.org back in the early 2000s. I had openoffice.org buttons on my website. I thought, this is going to be ace. It's hard to move people from one operating system to another, but as the Firefox people showed, and the Mozilla people showed before that, you can actually get people to try another browser. So I thought, OpenOffice, replacement for Microsoft Office that costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars or pounds, this has got to be fantastic. Now, of course, the first release, open source releases came out after it was Star Office, and it was quite bloated and slow and fiddly in places. But that's what happens, you know, it had needed a lot of time to clean up. The problem is it's still today bloated, fiddly, annoying, slow, complicated, a real mess. It's like it was being made by a committee. Everybody said, oh, you've got to have that little feature hidden away, poking its head out of the menus there. It's not a good idea at all. We need to give people something that wows them and surprises them. They go, this is fast, this is fresh. We need to develop things like Abbey Word or even K-Office to the point.
No.
Is that actually allowed?
You'll never know. Yeah, so
well done, Mike.
Thanks, Mike and Graham.
Sorry. Save me 5 seconds there.
I couldn't sit here and let that be said. Oh.
Please direct your flames direct to graham.morrison@futurenet.com.
But I have got a lovely image in my mind of Mike's pyjamas with open office book.
How did you know?
Actually, I really do believe that OO would be better if it weren't cross-platform. If it actually used native Linux features, or if it were cross-platform, at least it would use Qt, because Qt, whatever, because it has so many wonderful tools in Qt now for things like OpenGL. You can place a layer which is OpenGL and draw to it really, really nicely. You can't really do when it's cross-platform, because it's not going to work very well.
You would think making it cross-platform using Qt would be so much easier for developers anyway, because you look at the amount of effort they must have with what VCL, ASAL toolkit they got. I installed it on a Mac the other day, and you couldn't properly select text with a mouse dragging up over pages. It wouldn't make a continuous selection. They just keep coming across these little glitches and problems in the suite. Everything.
I
always...
probably just a Mac the other day, to be fair, and I put gedit on a Mac yesterday, and it was 80 megabytes. 80 megs for gedit. I mean, come on.
Well, I know gedit's normally only 70 megabytes. But and that's just for the executable binary.
They say OOO is cross-platform, but if you look at the source code, it's ifdef OSX, and then it's just a big list. ifdef Linux.
It's so powerful. There's so much technology in there, but this is not something we should be giving people. Coming soon, the new spin-off podcast. Yeah. Which I talk about what I want.
Mike failed.
Leaving such incredible rage behind, let's move swiftly on to our open ballot. The question this time, are you excited by HP's Slate? It's been a long time now since the Palm pre-launched with WebOS, the Linux-based operating system from Palm, which had nice standard things on it, like SDL, for example, which people could develop for. Palm has since been bought by HP, and before this, HP was working on a tablet running Windows 7. Now, having bought Palm, they're saying, actually, this whole Slate tablet could run WebOS for release, hopefully around October. So we asked you guys, do you think this is Linux's big chance to take on the Apple iPad, or do you think WebOS on Palm Pre just did not do enough to part with your cash to buy a Slate? So, gentlemen at the table, what do you think?
I'm really, really happy that they're looking at WebOS now, because I don't think any desktop operating system makes sense on a tablet. You know, it would have been better if it was Linux, normal Linux, than Windows, but even still, desktop Linux is full of metaphors used for mice and keyboards and stuff from the past. WebOS does, I've not used it, but it does look like, you know, very kind of focused, slimline, streamlined operating system for mobile devices. So there's a lot of stuff they've got to do right, but I'm actually quite excited about what it could become.
When I looked at the story, I was a little bit slow, so I just clicked on a random link and read the list of specs comparing the iPad with the HP device, and they all seemed quite favourable. Like the processor's better, and there's you can extend the storage capacity with external cards and stuff, and it all looked great until I got to the operating system bit, because I was looking at an old website. It said that the OS used on the HP thing was going to be Windows 7, and I thought, well, it looks great apart from the OS, and you know, now that they've decided to go with something Linux based, awesome, win-win.
Me? No, I'm not excited at all. It'll be rubbish.
Why?
It'll be pig ugly. The operating system, as great as WebOS can be, will be jerky. It'll be full of rubbish. You won't be able to install decent applications that won't work as well as they should anyway. The user experience will be pretty poor and it'll take several generations to catch up. Battery life will be rubbish. It'll be heavy. It'll be clunky.
Okay, Graham.
And it'll be a good few hundred dollars per unit cheaper than the iPad.
Will it?
That's what the thing I was looking at said.
Yeah. The difference is the Apple iPad is selling right now, whereas the Slate isn't available for another several months. I would be surprised if it really is that much cheaper. You know, touchscreens aren't cheap. That's a,
yeah, but they might use a grab touchscreen in
comparison. Well, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think, so the minute I started reading the specs, I thought, oh dear, this is looking very, very bad. Because even though that the HP specs are uniformly pretty much better, apart from the battery life, than the iPad, the fact that they feel they need to start by saying, look, we've got this much faster CPU or this much more RAM, I think maybe you're focusing on the wrong thing just slightly. I mean, the videos I've seen of the Slate do show it to be quite chunky, which is a problem automatically when you're carrying around a port device. I don't really want more specs. I think people are generally amazed by how low spec the iPad actually is. I'm more interested in what it actually does than how high the spec is. Same for the iPhone. The iPhone hasn't got particularly high specs. You know, I think 600 megahertz CPU or something.
And downclocked in the early mods, but it's still very, very fast and snappy,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
it
that's works. The important thing.
Yeah, not how many megapixels you've got on the camera, even though people like to think about that, or how many pixels you've got on the screen. So there was quite a reaction on the comments. Dan W. said, I'm not interested in any tablet, really. I have my netbook and my phone. I don't need another in-between device. But I'd still much prefer a Linux-based tablet to a Crapple.
Crapple. I see what he's done there.
Yeah.
like a crab apple.
Ultimately, says Milo Lethbridge, I would prefer a Linux embedded device over any Apple product any day. There's a theme here, guys. But if HP really wants to take off, it's going to have some amazing feature or just be generally better in everything than the iPad. Well, obviously, really, isn't it? If it's generally better than the iPad. Anyway, otherwise, it will just go unnoticed like every other Windows tablet. As for an Android tablet, I think Google probably has the upper hand of HP because everyone knows, loves, and trusts Google. I don't love Google.
No,
but their Slate things will be free.
And knowing them, they'll probably make it 10 times awesomer than the iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 times awesomer.
That's the awesomest.
And how would you do that? Awesome. I mean, awesome. That guy before saying it has to be obviously better in every respect, that is an obvious thing. But as a lot of people seem to think, well, as long as it's open source, that makes it better anyway. But the vast, vast, vast majority of people don't think like that. I used an iPad for the first time this morning just for a few minutes, and the web browsing is so fast, the interface is so fast, it just feels really, really good to use. And that's
open source, isn't it?
What?
WebKit?
Well, WebKit is, yeah. WebKit is. But a lot of the operating system and software around it isn't. But that's what we've got to do. Being Linux and being open source is one thing, and that's great for the community. But it has got to, you've got to put it in someone's hand, and it's got to feel better. So I do share your concern, Graham, that it could be too big and bulky.
It will be.
If it's got a fan in it, I think they've failed already. You
is,
know?
It, is it Slatin? Are they changing to a ARM?
I don't, or a Snapdragon or something. I don't know. I really don't know. It was Atom, wasn't it? But
yeah.
If it's got a fan in it, it's got to be, like the iPad, fast, friendly, snappy, kind of, pull it out and use it.
But the bits that are important, as Paul was saying, it's the attention to detail, the obsessive attention to detail in how the software works and how the software is going to work with new applications. And HP won't spend any time on that. All they'll spend their time on is negotiating contracts for the hardware that they're going to put in their tiny little box, making it look reasonable in decent lighting conditions. And they won't do anything specific with webOS. Nothing specific enough to let it compete with the iPad, I don't think.
Ptux said, not knowing any of this hardware very, very well, I think the Android system would be my preference.
Android?
That's great. I don't know, but Android. Well, there seems to be a recurring theme again here that people like Google.
Yeah.
People like Android. It's obviously a brand working here. I hear some great things about Android and the open system behind it, which gives me some confidence. It may be that I listen to too many geek-type podcasts, hooray, but Android does seem to get a good deal of positive airtime. I think this is where Apple gets their momentum from. The fact there is always a great deal of hype behind their products and the fact they are perceived as being more reliable than anything else, even if their stuff is so overpriced.
I think what's happened is that millions of people across the world have been sent anonymous letters, seemingly from Google, saying, we know what you download over your open Wi-Fi network, and unless you support Google, we're going to tell everyone.
Oh, dear.
Is the iPad overpriced?
No, I don't think it is. I can see that argument coming for some of Apple's computers, especially on the higher end. But there isn't really this market at the moment anyway. There aren't really any tablet devices quite like the iPad. So I mean, people keep comparing it to a netbook, which is a bit of a problem because it serves a different market, but...
Well, there were some tablet PCs, but they were rubbish.
Well, yeah, yeah.
MS invented the tablet market, to be fair. The spinny tweak keyboards that turned around.
A great big hulking Lenovo just
didn't
things,
work, yeah.
Windows start buttons things. No, it's horrible. This type of device is a relatively new market, so... I don't. It's not cheap, but I don't think it's overpriced.
Nobody important said, "If I could stuff a Debian install in the HP slate, there's no end to the fun I'd have."
Super Tux cart, frozen bobble.
Cool.
If you can get the hardware acceleration working.
Yeah.
But flip side says, but WebOS suggests that the slate will be as locked down as the iPad, without the smooth and sleek design that Apple's products usually offer as a benefit to distract from the login. As much as I'd like to have faith that HP will do the right thing, the freedom offered by a device remains to be seen. I doubt that firmware and other things needed to keep the slate running will actually be available. Interesting point. So it could run Linux, but be completely unmodifiable still. Mm. Is the Palm Pre hacked much?
What, like rooted or anything?
Well, can you modify the Linux install?
Don't know.
No, I don't remember. I installed the SDK and it wasn't very inspiring. But right. there is SDL. You can make games through it using Linux libraries, I believe.
Right, so there isn't a great big barrier to developing stuff for it.
No, it all runs in VirtualBox, I remember correctly.
Oh, it's an x86, actually. Yeah, because somebody got it running recently, didn't they? Somebody got a WebOS running on a netbook in the middle of the screen because it was natively booting.
Yeah.
So presumably you can swap out the kernel if you want.
Biggles 1000 says, the iPad is fantastic. HP's products are normally cheap and plasticky. Is this you, Graham? I have the misfortune of owning several HP computers, laptop, tower, etc., and they all broke in some way. HP products do not last. They are overpriced for their quality, and the HP slate will fall at the iPad's feet like the numerous HTC devices fell at the iPhones. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that's fair. I think I have a similar experience with HP.
But I'm talking particularly about the HTC phones that try and take on the iPhone.
Oh, I see what you mean. I think if you look at a graph of HTC development, they've changed slightly to adapt to the iPhone, but I don't think they've changed a great deal. They still stick to their fat, feature-full phones that are slightly more easier to use. I mean, Android's helped them a lot.
Mm.
But I think HTC have their own niche, and they're doing very well.
Don't they bring out a new phone every sort of 3 months or so?
Yeah, they do. And lots of people seem to use them. And we had HTC phones. I actually had a great experience with it.
John Vile says, sounds like a must-have doorstop. Is it really important that there be a Linux iPad, especially if it's on a cheap and nasty device? Not excited. What do you think, Andrew?
I read something in the paper the other day, yesterday. Oh, that was a long weekend. Some German MEP was proposed that all MEPs get iPads to make them more internet connected with their constituents and more accountable and more joined up and not islands of data. And I just thought, wow, that's awesome. They could go for something cheap that connects to the internet instead of looking at the most expensive thing in the world.
Doesn't a Norway PM have an iPad?
He does, doesn't he? He was photographed using his iPad to check. He was checking his email, actually. He was stuck at an airport somewhere during that ash crisis, and yeah, he was managing Norway from an iPad. I mean, there's a special app
it's
for
Google
that.
Maps.
In other country, there's an app for that.
Yeah. Where's Norway again in Google Maps? There it is somewhere, I'm sure. No, that's Sweden. Banana Umarang said, I don't really rate the iPad that highly. It's big and it can't make calls.
What?
No USB port or anything. The WePad or WeTab looks better as it runs an Android-based system and has USB ports.
USB ports on there?
I do.
Why?
Just get a full-on computer.
Plug stuff in.
Yeah, but that's proper computer stuff, isn't
but
it?
But my phone's got a USB thing, but it goes from like normal size USB to tiny USB, and I've lost about five of those little leads.
That's
what do you want to plug in exactly?
I want to transfer stuff.
Like?
Files.
Like a USB stick?
Yeah, exactly. But one of the USB stick you can make phone calls from.
Hey, anyway, anyway,
what I was going to say is, if the iPad could make phone calls, then it would be, Effie said this earlier on today, if the iPad could make phone calls, it would be like the phone from Trigger Happy TV.
Great big user.
I still think it might be able to make phone calls, because the 3G model has a SIM card inside with an active assigned phone number, so you can send and receive data.
Cool.
Question is, can you then place a call from there on? I'm going to try now. To come clean, I have ordered an iPad for myself. It's due to arrive this week. I make apps every under the sun.
God.
I know, it's terrible. It's terrible,
defend
isn't it?
You every single day.
Yeah, mine'll be here this week, hopefully, and I look forward to fiddling around with it, breaking it. And,
but doesn't Guantanamo Bay, listen.
How will that impact on your being sponsored by Microsoft?
Just in case this is the first time you listen to this podcast, that's a running joke. And with that flame bait, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget all the notes.
Whoa. Hang on a minute here. Look, you didn't actually do the You Dare Us challenge. I think you haven't actually demonstrated your geek credentials today. I think we need one more thing to properly determine this.
I'm not sure I agree. I'm going to say no, like Mike Graham does.
No, you're going to do it, right? Well, I'm stopping this podcast right now.
Go on then.
There we go. Right, you've got 30 seconds to name as many distros as possible, beginning with S.
Sidux.
Go.
Slytaz.
I got that one first. Let's say Slytaz. Slackware.
Sabayon.
Sabayon's good.
Sousa.
Oh, Sousa. Oh. Did I cheat that one?
don't get open, Sousa.
Isn't Sabayon an Italian dish?
Yeah, it's like egg whites frothed up with sugar.
Hello. So.
Tangent.
Deviation.
Any more? Graham hasn't
Fedora.
Chipped in, yeah?
Smundriva.
Smundri. Go on, Graham.
It's probably a sort of silly Slackbuntu, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, Slackware, have you said that?
I said Slackware. Right?
Slackware, sorry.
There must be one called Soyuz.
Soyuz? No.
Scientific
sorry.
Ubuntu? Must be.
Yeah.
No, but there is Scientific Linux, which is a rel rebuild.
That's what I meant.
Ah, to you, Ubuntu and Linux are synonymous. You want to deny us choice.
I'm going
to
spell it badly and say CentOS.
you've actually got you've got most of the ones that everybody knows about there. Slackware, Sousa, Slytaz, Sabayon, Smoothwall, Slack, Sidux, Sorcerer, SourceMage.com, Scientific Linux. There's also Slackintosh as well. System Rescue CD. if you want to count that. Skull Linux, Sabili, Salix, and Slamp, which must be a Linux, Apache, MySQL.
What's Salix?
Salix? I don't know.
That could be my distro of choice for the next 2 weeks.
There we go, yeah.
Let's find out what it actually is.
It's probably number 98.
Oh. It's too good. And with that, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget all the notes, such as they are on the website. And we do occasionally read out your comments, so you can email us at paul.hudson@gnet.com, and we will dig through the best and put them online. See you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.